welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a Huffington Post blogger, a 25-year green health journalist, and I also do this program every week, which is a great opportunity to connect the dots on the connection between our personal health and well-being and our total health environment, everything that's going on in our community, our society, and the world. So that covers quite a lot of territory, and that's why the show is so varied. If you're a new listener, because you just come into the new time slot, I hope you'll come back for more and also check out our archives on PRN under Connect the Dots, because a lot of really terrific people have been on this show. Actually, today's show is also really a great thing for us to cover here, because it really gets a big picture view. Because what happens when you connect all the dots is that you're able to see the big picture. And sometimes we're sort of so caught up in our immediate lives and our immediate concerns that, you know, we kind of forget to look at the bigger picture. And yet nowadays, the bigger picture is calling us more and more to pay attention to it. And on today's show, we'll be featuring the philosophy of Buckminster Fuller through a new book, and the author, L. Stephen Sudden, is with me today, and we'll be talking about that in a few minutes after we do our action item of the day. So basically we're going to get some guidance from someone who really could see the big picture to such an extent that he was really far and ahead of our time. At the same time, we also do have to take care of local concerns, and today I have another report and action on a topic we cover a lot on Connect the Dots, because I'm based in the Northeast region, but although really it's a national and global concern, and that is fracking. Recently, just this couple of days ago, New York State Governor Cuomo and his Department of Environmental Conservation and Protection issued guidelines to begin fracking in New York State. And they issued the final draft, really, which is the green light for this to begin to cross the border and come into our state. Surprisingly, even though the budget for that department included making a health impact assessment study to really see what the effects would be, because this will be occurring upstream from New York, Philadelphia, in areas of the water and food supply to the Northeast region, there has been no health impact assessment done. People from the CDC, experts there, have said that it would take actually a couple of years to do an accurate assessment, and that there are many troubling findings already emerging as fracking has been done all around the country. But someone's in a big hurry not to do them, despite the fact that just in the last couple of days, yet another report has come out. This time it's a scientific research study in an upcoming edition of Science of the Total Environment that shows the terrible air pollution and attendant health problems in regions where fracking occurs. And this is all the airstream up, kind of upstate that comes down through New York City that would be affected if fracking were to proceed. There have been a whole collection of physicians and experts who have really requested that a health assessment occur. Yet the governor is of New York State, Governor Cuomo, is unfortunately moving ahead without that. But that's unless we just kind of accept it and don't take action. So I begin every Connect the Dots with an activist opportunity. This really would apply to anyone in the New York region. You can call Governor Cuomo's office, and urging groups like United for Action and others are urging people to call today. The number is 866-584-6799. And I'll repeat that number again in just a minute, giving you a moment to get your pencils. The lead author of the study writes that our data shows that it's important to include air pollution in the national dialogue on natural gas development that has focused largely on water exposures. And again, she says even more studies are needed. So this is an area that has been kind of exempted from federal environmental protections that is creating health effects nationwide that hasn't been studied. You can call Governor Cuomo once again at 866-584-6799. If you would like to learn more about fracking, and this is the first time that you're listening and have heard this on our show, check the Connect the Dots archives. I've interviewed numerous people who, both from the front lines in Pennsylvania where fracking is done, as well as grassroots activists, leaders, and others on the show. And you can also check out my website, healthjournalistblog.com, which, among the many topics that I cover, there are a number of blogs that are really primers on fracking. I am planning to do an upcoming blog on the Huffington Post that really covers the health impact issues completely. And you can also sign up to follow me there to catch that blog when it comes out. Or at my website where I'll also post it. That's healthjournalistblog.com. Once again, please call Governor Cuomo today if you're in the Northeast region and are concerned about health, water, and air quality in our region. 866-584-6799. So that's the local story. And now let's widen the lens and go back to someone who had the big picture. So I want to welcome to Connect the Dots author Stephen Seiden, who's author of the new book on Buckminster Fuller, A Fuller View. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So I really love this book, I have to say. I read it from cover to cover, and I had actually heard Buckminster Fuller at a day-long presentation back, I think, when I was in college. And like many of the people, the thing that's so interesting about this book is that it's a really easy introduction to his thought, because it sort of brings up sort of key nuggets of his profound insights. And for those who don't know who he was and is, I'll kind of let you kind of orient our listeners in just a second. But the thing that's really great about the book is that it makes his thought digestible through bringing up these nuggets and having essays from, you know, various people who were influenced by him, kind of including you, obviously, expand upon what his teachings were. And I do recall from having heard him, having the experience that many report, that he spoke in a very dense, you know, and kind of abstruse way sometimes. So extracting these nuggets was like mining for gold to get the pieces that really can help a newcomer orient themselves to him. And he has quite a lot to offer. So, Stephen, can you tell us just a little bit about him, and then we can discuss some of these wonderful nuggets that you have mined in this book?
Sure. So Bucky Fuller, and he preferred to be called Bucky even when he was 87 years old talking to, you know, anybody, kids. He wanted them to call him Bucky. That was his choice. So I refer to him as Bucky, not out of disrespect, but because that's what he wants. And Bucky was born in 1895 and died in 1983. And in 1927, he had what most people consider the pivotal experience, where he was a throwaway. He had lost all his money, all his family's money. His daughter had died in his arms, and he felt responsible. A lot of things had gone wrong, and he had this moment where it was like It's a Wonderful Life. He was walking along the shore of Lake Michigan, and he had an insurance policy. And he had an experience where he found himself walking 2 feet off the ground in a sphere of white light, and the voice said to him, "You don't have the right to kill yourself. You don't belong to yourself. You know, now go out and, you know, do what you're supposed to do." And he had to figure it out. So what he did for the next 56 years, first he was quiet for about a year. He didn't really talk to anybody except his wife and his new daughter. And then he created what became a 56-year experiment, using himself as guinea pig B to determine and document the difference that one individual can make that cannot be achieved by any organization, religion, corporation, no matter how large or powerful. And the key point here is document. He saved everything. So we have a record of one man's life. And when he died, he had the longest listing of who's who in America. He'd written 40-some books. And I purposefully put a very short bio of Bucky in the front of the book so that people who are new can actually get a little better taste. And because in 88 I published my first Bucky book, which is called Buckminster Fuller's Universe, which is 500 pages describing his life. So,
and you know, there's obviously more to be mined there as well. You know, the thing that makes Bucky so fresh, alive, and surprisingly present for our time is, you know, when somebody is a pioneer. I mean, in his case, people at first were questioning his ideas, but later many came to be moved by them and influenced by them. So it's not true that he labored unknown and now we're recognizing or understanding him. In fact, he seeded a lot that's going on in the culture by seeding the work of other people who have been thought leaders over the last generation or so. So, you know, as that's been fermenting, however, reconnecting with his ideas now or connecting with them for the first time, they seem surprisingly fresh and current, as if they were designed for right now. And that is the most amazing thing about the nuggets that are in the book. The one that really just stays with me so powerfully is his notion of a world that works for everybody.
Right. Yeah. And the reason they're current and fresh is because Bucky called himself a comprehensive anticipatory design scientist. Anticipatory being he was looking at problems that he saw would appear 50 to 100 years into the future, which is now. So he said what you do is if you really want to do something big, you solve problems that you know are going to come up. You create the solution and then you wait. So he created these seeds of solutions for everything from, you know, global energy to personal relationships, literally. And the nice thing about the way his solutions, all Bucky's solutions, first of all, they were all experiential. I mean, he was like all great teachers said, don't believe anything I say. Check it out against your personal experience. If it works, use it. If it doesn't, most people say get rid of it, but I say put it aside because it may come up later. And when things change in your life or a situation changes. So he was always working into the future, always looking into the future. And he left us these solutions, these seeds. And that was what made getting all these people, global visionaries, easy to get them to write stuff for me, because he seeded a lot of those people.
Yeah, that really comes through in the book. You have people that, you know, are very well known, such as Barbara Marx Hubbard, as well as, you know, many that are, or Lynn Twist, as well as many that have, you know, gone into the corporate world or the educational world and carried those ideas forward and grown sort of gardens of process and practice there, based upon his work. And it's very impressive. You know, it's interesting because it's kind of it's not that synchronistic given the world we're in right now. But you know, I began the show by talking about this action item for the day, which was, you know, kind of looking at the fact that government and industry are moving forward to create a very high impact industrial operation, with high technology that majorly affects, you know, it digs into the earth and takes water out of circulation. It, you know, it has major environmental effects, which in turn have major health effects. I came to my work as a health journalist. I came to environmentalism as a health journalist because the environment is not just for, you know, the spotted eagle or species that are, you know, becoming extinct. It's also for humans. And so, you know, human health and environmental ecological balance are intimately interconnected. And yet, you know, we make these choices, government and industry makes choices without looking ahead to what will happen. So, you know, in today's action item. I'm saying, look, there's no health assessment here for how this is going to impact millions of people. Shouldn't we look into that? And here, in contrast with Bucky, you have somebody who, you know, 50 years ago was trying to assess our planetary course and what needed to happen proactively rather than retroactively. We create a health problem and deal with it after the fact, you know, to kind of make the situation, to make a better world for everyone. How accurate was Bucky in his environmental, future-oriented environmental concerns and predictions, and what does he have to say to us today about our current situation?
Well, he was pretty accurate, and he, like so many people who are on that level, he didn't really dwell in physical time all that well. I mean, he would do these lectures that people would use on once. I mean, first time I saw him, he was this little old man. He was in his 70s, gets in front of the room and sits down in a chair and starts talking. And 5 hours later, they have to kick him off the stage, basically. And it was supposed to be an hour and a half talk. So his prediction, and he wasn't lecturing. He was thinking, well, he called it thinking out loud. We would call it channeling today. He was just thinking out loud. He didn't want to communicate. He just wanted to allow it to be. And his predictions were pretty much right on, although the timing was sometimes off. The big one was that I love to talk about was the fact that, you know, he started doing this in the 1930s. That's when he was assessing and inventorying all global resources. So in the 1930s, when you think back about it, not only didn't he have a computer, he didn't have a calculator, and he had access to the data. So he calculated that every time resources came around, what would happen is we'd add something to them. And this is before anyone ever heard of recycling. What he saw that what got added to him was knowledge. And by adding that knowledge, we could do more with less. And he said, well, we're doing so much more with lessing that eventually we're going to reach a place where there's enough for everybody, where there's enough food, enough shelter, enough everything to take care of everybody. And he predicted the day to be 1976. Now, he happened to be right, because we now know that in 1976, it's been proven, we reached a place on the planet where there's enough food to feed everybody. The Hunger Project got that word out pretty much. But now everybody knows it. It's and yet 50,000 people die of starvation every day. You know, we'll die today and we'll die tomorrow. And it makes no sense, logically. If there's enough to go around, we have a world that works for everyone. We just don't know it. Bucky used to say, you know, we're 5 billion billionaires who don't know we are. Now we're 7 billion billionaires who don't know we are. So it's there, and on every level, including energy. Fracking is like another smoke and mirrors government thing. Let's keep people onto a meter. You know, as long as we can sell it to them, that's good. Because Bucky used to say, if we could harness something like 0.01% of the solar energy that hits the planet right now, every day, that would be more than enough to take care of everybody. End of conversation. And no one has to pay for it either. I mean, because it's free. Autonomy and freedom is something he got. That was what he was about, making people free and autonomous, getting them off the grid, getting them off the meters.
So what you're saying is the resources are there, the technologies are there,
yep.
And what is lacking is the will to do it, as blocked by parties that, you know, have other agendas, perhaps. What about one of the other things is about what he had to say was his confidence, which is why I think he inspired so many people that they could make a difference. Because I think when people, you know, look at some of the challenges we face and look at the infrastructures opposing change and, you know, have to deal with all the work to work around them, persuade them, push back, do this and do that, some people lose confidence that a change could be made before perhaps they ever begin trying to make one. And and more people need to kind of participate. But they perhaps aren't doing it because they are distracted by other things, or they don't really see a problem, or they don't think they can make a difference. You know, I thought that what Bucky had to say about each person acting in integrity for themselves in a certain kind of way, as a you know, the difference that could make if each person would act in integrity as they saw it, regardless of consequences, the power of that. He was a great believer in that. Can you talk a little bit more to our listeners about, you know, what he saw as the opportunity just for the average person?
Sure. And there's two things, and I tend to forget the second by the time I get done talking about the first. The first thing is the definition of integrity and what is integrity. And you have to understand that the last thing he said publicly ever on the planet was in response to a question about, you know, after you've done all this stuff. And this was 2 weeks before he died. He said, somebody said, what's the most important thing? And he turned, without a blink, he said, personal integrity. Hold on to your personal integrity no matter what. And so his definition of personal integrity, which I spend a lot of time with little kids talking about, actually mostly has to do with structure. Anything that has integrity holds its shape. Mm-hmm. And that you can model it with a model, but you can also model it with a life. So first of all, you have to know what your shape is. You kind of have to know your core values and like that. But then, you know, regardless of external circumstances, you just hold on to that personal integrity. And you go, oh, okay, well. And then people go, say to me, I mean, this has happened lots, and I've said it to myself, and I've heard Bucky whisper in my ear, you know, one of the big things he used to say, it's what one of the two highlighted phrases in the book was, pay attention, dear boy. He used to say that to people all the time. Pay attention, dear boy. You know, be awake. And that's how you figure out what you need to do to make a difference. And the way it works is really simple. You look around wherever you are, you know, your house, your work, wherever, and see what needs to be done that's not being attended to, and do that. You know, it could be solving global hunger. It could be washing the dishes. But you do it, and you know that it's making a difference. And when you get done with that one, you look for another one. Yeah, and it's like, it becomes pretty easy. I mean, that's the only reason that I've written two books on Bucky Fuller and have several more in the works. It's because nobody else was doing it. It needed to be done. And if somebody else comes along and says, hey, I want to do that, and they can do a better job than you, Bucky used to do this all the time. He'd start a project, and he'd turn it over to somebody else who wanted to do it. And there's plenty of other things to do. Yeah, so... So it's pay attention and find what needs to be done and do that. It could be really, I mean, start simple. That's what I tell people, start simple. You know, maybe it's a petition, who knows? Everybody's got something different. And everybody has a unique gift. And that's one of the things that, you know, he spent a lot of time encouraging people. I can't tell you the number of people who have told me about Bucky encouraged me. And there's a lot of people who have never met him, you know. And just read, did this, heard this, and next thing you know, they're off creating books and all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what a sort of nugget is, actually. It's fruitful.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that anyone can plant. It's almost like he's the Johnny Appleseed of, you know, of our time, in a sense, on a level of inspiration and everything like that. You know, actually, I'll share with you something that really inspired me about Bucky.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something he said, although I've learned a lot more about the things he said, you know, in the book. And it's not something that he invented. Some of our listeners may not know that Buckminster Fuller, Bucky, invented the geodesic dome, for example. But it's actually something that he did and that happened with his life. For friends of mine were friends of Bucky, some older friends and mentors. And as a result, I went to his funeral. or his memorial service, I guess it was, at St. John the Divine. There was a special service held following his passing. And so, you know, I attended this as a young person. And the thing that really blew me away was that he and his longtime wife had passed away within a day or two of each other. And it was clear to me from hearing about that, he died first and she followed, that how great their love and connection must have been. And I was so impressed by that. I thought of it as a very high achievement of love and of relationship. That happened, and it sort of it was almost like a shining star. It was like a model for me.
Yeah.
That was possible.
Right. It's actually a model for a lot of us, and it's a little. It's even more amazing, because so 10 days when he did his last talk in Huntington Beach, 10 days before he died, Anne was in a coma. She'd been in a coma. She had cancer, and she'd been in a coma. And he said publicly, I think she's waiting for me. And he also told other people that they had agreement that he was going to go first because she was scared. This is an agreement that they had between them. And he was in perfect health, although he was 87 years old. He just had a physical. He was in perfect health. And what happened was, he was at the hospital, Good Samaritan Hospital in L.A., July 1st, and he was holding her hand. She was in a coma, and he said she squeezed it, and he died. Now, he was in the intensive care unit of Good Samaritan Hospital. If there was anywhere he could have been saved, he was there. And he died of they said he died of a heart attack, you know, but they couldn't save him, and she died 36 hours later. She never came out of the coma, and they were buried together, you know, in a joint grave under a tombstone that says, "Call me Bucky," or "Call me Trim Tab." The other thing that happened was they went to his office, and there was a stack of papers, and it said, "If anything happens to me, please make sure this gets published. This is the last thing I have to say." You know, and that's, to me, that's the way, you know, I've heard that's the way the conscious people, the bodhisattvas and all that, that's the way they leave. They leave consciously. And he did.
Well, the thing about that is really so touching to me is that, you know, when we hear of bodhisattvas leaving or Buddhas, you know, enlightened beings and the tales of their conscious death and you know, facing death consciously with awareness and going through what in some Eastern spiritual traditions maintain is a certain transition. And, you know, depending on belief systems, people, you know, may or may not kind of go along with that. But the thing is, one usually hears of these passings as solitary, you know, of the attainment of a lifelong monk or guru who, you know, lived in the Himalayas or something. And here, which I guess, you know, here are a couple who go together. There's just something about that for our time, you know, in this place, I just find that so beautiful. And there's so few models or examples of that kind of thing. And of course, he was the instigator in that she was already in a coma, but it speaks to a level of love and connection. And of course, he was connected to the whole wide world. He had a heart big enough for the whole world to be thinking and devoting his life to ways to create a world that works for everybody. But, you know, sometimes people can stand in a leadership position like that, and, you know, and yet behind the scenes, their personal relationships, the way they relate to a spouse, their staff, their kids, you know, it can be like, you know, there can be a big shadow behind the great man or woman. And, you know, and having studied with a number of different people and covered a number of different people, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. But that doesn't seem to – this speaks to really the true integration of who Bucky, you know, was. I mean, at least to me, that's my sense of it. I don't know if you, you know, share that or what.
Yeah, and he wasn't perfect, you know. Mm-hmm. He never claimed to be perfect, but he never let the shadow things in his life get in the way of his work. I mean, in the 1927 until the 40s, we would have labeled him an alcoholic because he drank a lot, and he partied a lot, and he smoked. And on his 50th anniversary, or on the 25th anniversary, his 25th wedding anniversary, when it was 1940-something, he quit smoking, and he quit drinking. And part of it was because of his love for his wife. And so on their 25th anniversary, which was also his birthday, he quit. Now, he also quit. The other reason he quit is because he knew that his drinking might get in the way of his message. People might go, oh, you know, it's just this guy who's, you know, he drinks too much and parties too much, and so we're not going to listen to him. So he stopped, because the message was too important to him. His work was, his mission was so important. Mm-hmm. And without the support of Anne, it would never have happened, because she put up with a lot of crap from him. You know, he was he wasn't perfect, and he was gone a lot. You know, he was traveling all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, he circled the planet something like 56 times, which doesn't sound like a big deal today, but we're talking about in the 50s and 60s, you know.
Was a lot of traveling at that time. My gosh. The planes were slower, everything. You know, we're going to have to take a break now for Progressive Radio Network station identification. But we'll be back to continue the conversation with Stephen Seiden. Stay with us, listeners, to hear more about Bucky Fuller. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Welcome back, listeners, to Connect the Dots. This is the second half of our show, and we come to you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Allison Rose Levy, green health journalist and Huffington blogger, as well as host of this show. And today we're talking about Bucky Fuller. For listeners who are just tuning in right now, I'm talking with Stephen Seiden, the author of a new book, A Fuller View, Buckminster Fuller's Vision of Hope and Abundance for All. This is a great way for anyone who has been curious about Bucky, would like to learn more, to easily access these wonderful nuggets of his wisdom and get familiar with his pioneering, very incredibly far-sighted vision and sort of prescription and wisdom for our time. I highly recommend that you look out for this book. It's actually, it really slakes the thirst, you know, for wisdom that encompasses a lot of the things that we are facing in our time, and which I try to cover here on Connect the Dots, the challenge to find a way to make a difference in our world today with all that's going on here on our planet. And so I just want to let you know that you can find the book, A Fuller View, on my guest today's website. It's called BuckminsterFullerNow.com, and Buckminster is BUCKMINSTR Fuller, FULLER, now, NOW.com. And that's where you can learn more about today's guest, Stephen Seiden, and get copies of and learn more about A Fuller View, as well as follow a blog to get more immersed in the topic, and I highly recommend it. So, you know, returning to that, one of the other things that really struck and fascinated me in the nuggets of his wisdom that you have in this book, Stephen, is the notion that we are residing together on a planet that Bucky referred to as Spaceship Earth, and that actually, far from you know, this kind of being our place to do with what we will, and you know, we're the masters of it and all of that, in fact, you know, that we are constitute a kind of experiment, and if humankind does not sort of go in the right direction and play its cards, you know, well, that experiment, the human experiment, could be kind of ended. You know, there could be a kind of universal, well, no, I guess it didn't work out so well for various reasons. And, you know, there's always that implication in his talking about, in his writings, you know, I'm picking that up. And in our time with global warming, with these environmental crises, these economic and political crises, and all the different things that are kind of bubbling and brewing on our planet, we're seeing, some people at least are seeing, many more ways that a, you know, an unfortunate scenario could actually come to pass or play out unless a shift is made. Bucky, of course, in doing an assessment, as you mentioned, of all of the Earth's resources and their potential to be used for the benefit of everybody, was looking at all of this way ahead of our time. But there's also that cautionary element that we could blow it, you know, if we don't make the right choices. And I find that very implicit in things he says, as well as explicit in certain ways. So could you talk a little bit more about that side of his vision?
Sure, and Bucky was actually very explicit, but I'd like to just make one correction because you spelled Buckminster wrong.
Oh, I did.
But that's it. But to make life easy for people, the website, you can also access the website by going to buckyfullernow.com. So because a lot of people can't spell Buckminster, and so
yeah.
buckyfullernow.com works just as well. Same thing.
Okay, great.
And Bucky, actually, one of the big questions that he was always asked is, do you think we're going to make it? And he would always say, I think it's touch and go. I don't know. And this was, you know, this was in the 70s and 80s. And he said, he used to say, we are in our humanity is in its final examination to see if we're a worthwhile experiment to universe. And he also said that universe, the way universe designs itself, is that there's always a backup system or two or three. So if we think we're the only ones here doing this, we're kind of very small vision. So we're not the only ones doing it. We're in an experiment to see if we're a worthwhile to universe experiment. And we're in this final examination. And he used to say we have a few years. And it's even getting more critical. I mean, I tell people we're a species on the verge of extinction. Mm-hmm. You know, it could happen in a week. It could happen in a year. It could happen tomorrow. Who knows? Mm-hmm. And we don't know. And it and things are going beyond tipping points quickly. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, Bucky found a solution. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to this paradigm shift that happened in 1976 when there was enough to go around. That's the good news is there's enough to go around. There's enough to support everybody. So we can stop trying to kill each other. And Bucky used to talk about it as the shift from weaponry to livingry. We have to shift our resources from weaponry to livingry. People go, livingry? Never heard that word. Well, you know, you never heard the word. If it was 50 or 60 years ago, Bucky used to say this word synergy. And nobody ever heard of that word, but he brought it into the popular vernacular. He made synergy. You wouldn't have heard it if it wasn't for Buckminster Fuller. So the new word is livingry, and livingry is exactly what it sounds like. It's, you know, food, education, shelter, all that stuff. There's enough to go around, but we have to shift, and it's now been proven that if we shift 40% of our weaponry budget, our military budget, to livingry, We solve all the problems. That means nobody dies of starvation, everybody eats, everybody has a place to live, everybody has as much education as they want. It all sounds very utopian, but it's really actually quite logical. Nobody loses any jobs either because the military folks just go into things that would solve all the problems. So it's the basic weaponry to living reshift is what we need to do. In order, and it's a mindset, you know. First of all, we have to go, okay, there's enough. So if there's enough, do I care if you have whatever you want? No, because I'm not going to compete with you for it because I've got everything I need. So, you know, who cares?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's so, but I mean, that's really interesting, because that derives from the same sort of scarcity mentality that prevents people from doing, just as you described in the first half of the show, doing whatever they perceive as being needed that's not being done. You see, that in their environment. And you said it could be as simple as doing the dishes, to taking action on something, to organizing, to care for something that isn't being taken care of for or seen. So there's just – it's kind of – I guess there's a sense that there's an – and I perceive this constantly. There's like almost an infinite amount of things that need doing. And yet there seems to be a disconnect between the work – created work that is compensated – versus the things that need to be done. There seems to be a kind of gap. The implication of what you're saying is it's an artificial gap. How do people navigate that? Because most people are clinging to whatever their, you know, whatever job or profession they have, based upon, you know, what is rewarded economically in this society, even if it's either anywhere from useless to harmful to, you know, to perhaps beneficial. And a lot of the beneficial work that needs to be done, I'm thinking of education here, or healthcare, is not, you know, or other, or even the press, which I'm a part of, is not necessarily well compensated. There are a lot of undone things that need doing, for which the kind of the economic mechanisms are not organized. Did he have any solutions for that?
Oh,
that,
yeah,
kind of not in the
totally
realm that he's
and don't think that I haven't experienced exactly what you're talking about, because who wants another book about Buckminster Fuller? I mean, really, truthfully, it's not like the publishers were not beating a path to my door, to say the least. And if it wasn't for Facebook, the book never would have come into being, which is a whole other story. But what Bucky said that I always fall back on personally, and a lot of other people do too, is that nature doesn't – there's nothing artificial. Nature always supports what needs to be done. And this is how he operated. So he would say, okay – there's this book that needs to be written, or whatever he saw needed to be done that wasn't being attended to, and he would start doing it. And he said, there's no artificial trees, there's no artificial anything. It's just and the thing we call pollution is actually just resources out of place. They're in the wrong place. It's all nature does. Nature is perfect, and we are part of nature. We human beings are part of nature. So if we're doing what needs to be done, we will be supported. Mm-hmm. Now, the caveat to the whole little formula, which I have found to be true, is that it doesn't happen the instant you go, okay, I'm going to write a book, and then Simon & Schuster gives me a call. No, it's not like that. It's like you take this, you know, we've been told this before by other teachers, but he actually proved, you know, he showed people that he could do, that this does work. And he got into a lot of pickles, and at the last minute got pulled from the fire every time. And so you take a first step and you take another step. And what he said is, by the way, the support always comes at the last minute when you think you don't have, you know, there's no other options. All the doors have closed. You are going down for the last time, and all of a sudden something happens.
He said that it happens at the last minute?
Yes, it always happens at the last minute. One of the most dramatic things in his life was that, you know, he built this car. I don't know if you people have seen it, but you can go on YouTube and different places and Google Dymaxion car, Dymaxion vehicle, Dymaxon, or Buckminster Fuller car, and you can see it. He built it in 1933. It went 130 miles an hour. It got 30-plus miles to a gallon. It would comfortably seat 12 people. It had front-wheel drive, and it would park in a space that was 6 inches longer than the car itself. And if you saw it going down the street today, you'd go, oh, my God, what's that a prototype for? And so he had this idea. First, he built a model, because that's what he said you do. You know, if you have an idea, everybody's got good ideas, but if you don't do something, it's worthless. So he built a model of the car, and then he went around and talked to people about it. And in 1933, when the banks all closed, a man gave Bucky a suitcase full of cash. literally, to build this car because he knew he was going to lose it anyhow, so he figured that he might as well give it to somebody who might do something with it. So literally at the last minute, so he walked into Bridgeport, Connecticut with a suitcase full of cash when nobody had any money, hired the best people, best engineers, and built three prototypes of this car. Now, you know, it just showed up at the last minute. There was no money around, and here he was. And this happened to him over and over again. And he just kept persisting and going, well, if nature will support it, if it's supposed to be. And if not. So that's how it works. And
that's,
I can speak from personal
jumping.
Experience, say, yes, that is how it works.
That's bungee jumping. I'm familiar with that. I'm very familiar with, okay. with that kind of bungee jumping personally. And but, you know, I just want to, you know, for people who are listening who haven't been bungee jumping that way, the thing about it is that, I mean, I've experienced a lot of what you're describing. And the thing that I've discovered about it is, if you, you know, it's hard, it, if you, it's easier, I'm speaking to, you know, people maybe in the millennial generation who are already being, actually, they don't have a choice, many are already bungee jumping because of the condition of our economy. But it's easier when you start bungee jumping younger, because then you have more of life to develop confidence
right.
in that. Process. It's harder if you kind of wait your whole life before you bungee jump, you know, which is, we're talking about leaping off the cliff here and, you know, and then, you know, flapping the wings and hoping that, you know, kind of a puffed of, but actually, you know, in our society, there are people who wander and change and go through stuff. And then there are a lot of, but because of the ferment, a lot of people really cling to, you know, out of understandable fear or worry, responsibilities for family and other things like that. They cling to, you know, whatever can be a rock or a pillar in, you know, a moving world. So, you know, what would Bucky say to people who, you know, to whom the idea of that kind of leap, you know, would be really scary?
Well, we go back to the doing what needs to be done and look around and take the small step. You know, he didn't always leap like that. Well, he did. He started when he was born, basically. And until the age of five, he was essentially blind. Nobody knew that he couldn't see. So until he got glasses when he was five, he couldn't see. And he had to take some leaps. And he learned how to do that. And he had a lot more obstacles. People think it was easy. If you listen to John Denver's song, What One Man Can Do, which was written for Bucky about Bucky on his 80th birthday, it talks about, you know, people think he had it easy, but he didn't. And he was always taking a step, and he was always checking it out, and he was willing to make mistakes. And he would get in front of the room. I mean, I heard him say this. He said, the reason I'm up here and you're not is because I've made way more mistakes than you have. In the first geodesic dome, I mean, most people know him as the inventor of the geodesic dome. Well, in 1948 at Black Mountain College, when they put together the first geodesic dome, there's a story about it. You can watch videos. The thing just fell down instantly. It just fell apart. And it wasn't because the idea was off. It was because the materials weren't right. And, you know, the next year he came back with better materials and they got one to stand up. But it stood up for like 30 seconds. There was a woman in an airplane circling around taking pictures, and she hardly got any pictures, and it just collapsed, you know. So these things happen. And the question is, you know, do you get up and try it again? And it's really important not to take big, you know, don't go out and try to, you know, solve global hunger unless you happen to be somebody in the position to do that, you know. Mm-hmm. It's the small things, and they small things.
But you
things
can contribute to a group,
yes.
or support the initiatives of groups that are, you know, addressing problems that you care about. That's what would translate into a small step, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
right, and that's how the, you know, this book, A Fuller View, is a bunch of little steps. I mean, we have never covered it, but basically, so people know, it's not even a book that's linear, so to speak, because it's a bunch of Buckminster Fuller quotations with explanations and commentary, mine and a lot of other people's. When the other people would write this, I would get them in an email. I was moved to tears. Some of them were, and some of our very personal experiences that no one's ever, they've never been written down before, because nobody ever asked these people about this. And so, once again, it's little steps, it's little piece. And I've been rereading the book since it's published, and I can't do anything about it anymore. I've been reading it at night, and it's really good. I want to tell people it's really good bedtime reading, because you can open it anywhere, read a few pages, and go, wow, and sleep on that for the night. You know?
Yeah, actually, I've been doing that too, and it's interesting, because I began doing it. I read it in exactly that way, and you know, you open it, there's always something there, and then actually I read the whole book that way, because you know I then went and I was like, well, I read this part, but I haven't read this part. Let me read this part again, you know, and that kind of thing, and it's also I think, you know, the book itself is supportive of creating a sense of optimism, you know, an empowerment about the fact that, you know, we have the capacity to change. And, you know, kind of taking this thought too, you said that, you know, basically we were talking about, you know, kind of taking risks or leaping off the cliff or doing something and then kind of nature supporting it in an unexpected way, taking those kinds of risks and making mistakes along the way. Well, you know, as a society, with a lot of our social policy choices that we've allowed, you know, industry and others to do, we've made a lot of, you know, questionable choices that are creating a lot of problems that we don't know how to solve. And that's leading to the aspect of potential extinction that we discussed earlier. Well, that's a big, big mistake. You know, I want to say that if we're, you know, nature will do a bailout. The question is, what part will human beings play in that bailout? So, you know, we can't just kind of trust that the, you know, sum total of all our mistakes will be corrected by nature if we're not helping. And so everything that any of us can do to participate, however large or small, or with whatever, you know, you feel called to, listeners, is important. I mean, Bucky really believed. I think that brings us to, you know, what was written on the tombstone for himself and his beloved wife Anne, which I think maybe many of our readers will be unfamiliar with. And let me just say before we get into that, that this is all from the book A Fuller View by Stephen Seiden. Highly recommended reading. Please do go and get that. And before we kind of go out in talking about this sort of final wisdom of Bucky's, I just also want to, you know, encourage listeners to tune in next week, Wednesday at 10 a.m., to Connect the Dots with me, Allison Rose Levy, and we'll be here for you again. Upcoming, I'm going to be presenting at Green Festival in New York City on April 22nd. I'm moderating two panels. One is on fracking, and the other is on toxic chemicals, with Andy Egregious of Safer Chemicals, Healthy Families. And we're going to have a whole bunch of wonderful speakers that will be highlighted in this upcoming Green Festival on the show in the coming weeks. And once again, we're talking with Stephen Seiden, author of A Fuller View. So the tombstone, you know, kind of saying that Bucky had, tell us about that, Stephen.
Yeah, it was at his request. It was very clear that he wanted it to say, "Call me Trim Tab," and people need to know about Trim Tab, because you want to make a difference in the world, you be a Trim Tab. The analogy of the Trim Tab, a Trim Tab is actually a physical thing. On the back of a rudder of the big ships, people think the ships steer by the rudder, but they don't. On the back of the rudder, there's a very small rudder. It's very narrow. It doesn't take much effort to turn it. Well, when they want to turn the ship, the captain turns the wheel, and it moves. It turns the trim tab, which changes the pressure of the water, which causes the rudder to move, which causes the ship to turn. So it takes very little effort to move the big ship. And they're on airplanes. Anywhere there's a rudder, there's always a trim tab. So Bucky spent most of his life being a trim tab. So So trim tab, in my particular instance, yes, I could talk to one person at a time, or I could talk to you on the radio. Talking to you on the radio is a better trim tab. Writing a book is a better trim tab than, you know, talking to one person at a time. Nothing wrong with talking to one person at a time. Nothing wrong with giving one thing, doing one-on-one, but the Buddhists call it simple means. Something like that. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, it's been around for a long time. And Bucky, you know, that was what he was. He was a trim tab, and his wisdom is a trim tab. It make you find out when you're doing your what needs to be done, what's wanted and needed here. If you can notice it being a trim tab, you're even in better shape, because you will get, you know, 100 out for one in.
So that's the message. I mean, if people sometimes want like the simple takeaway. And so the simple takeaway, I think, from his wisdom in this whole conversation is for each one to look at their life. And that means every one of you listening to the show today, and figure out, you know, how can you position yourself with your gifts, with your passions, with what you care about, to be a trim tab for what you're doing in your life. Thank you so much, Stephen. It's been great having you and Bucky on the show. And listeners, come back next week for another edition of Connect the Dots every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Mawale, 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 mawale